Well, good morning, and it gives me great pleasure to have with us today Mr. Karim Birani from Birani Real Estate Advisors. I mean, he has a huge experience, and not just in the local real estate market, but he has a global firm that has offices in Vancouver, Seattle, in London, and Beijing, and so he's on the road a lot. Welcome, Mr. Birani.
Thank you, Ozzy. Always great to see you.
Well, the funny thing is, you say you've been 30 years of experience in the business. You don't look old enough to.
That's very kind of you, Ozzy. Lots of experience and lots of ups and downs, but lots of fun. We've had lots of fun in this business.
Well, that's the thing, because the specialty that you have, you deal on the luxury side of things, and it's a different client. That's a different product. And so I'm really looking forward to get sort of the ins and out on what buildings are like and what developers are doing down there. Now, given your experience in sort of the pre-sale market, what's some of the creative and effective strategies that you have seen?
Well, developers utilize a variety of creative strategies to entice potential buyers. One approach we're seeing more often is creating interactive must-see sales galleries. And currently we're in one for Monogram. That's our latest development that we are marketing at Burrard and Davie. Another effective strategy is event-driven marketing, including exclusive launch events, themed receptions, curated networking opportunities that bring together brokers and prospective buyers in a dynamic setting. These events not only showcase the development, but also foster personal connections and a sense of community. Localized storytelling also plays a key role. Developers craft compelling narratives that highlight the unique lifestyle and cultural aspects of the neighborhood. This resonates deeply with the targeted demographics that we have. On the international front, developers establish strong presence through partnerships with global affiliates, targeted outreach in key overseas markets. By blending personal engagement and creative storytelling, developers in Vancouver successfully attract a diverse array of buyers to their developments and presentation centers.
Well, it's a different kind of a buyer. You know, it's certainly some of the buildings that you have marketed are some like First Light in Seattle and the Vancouver House, and then the Alberni that was Kengo Kuma, the Butterfly. My office is actually right across from the Butterfly on Burrard Street, and I've seen it go up for the last few years. And it's mind-boggling, you know, what the developer has created. And you have 1515, and like you said, the 49-story Monogram is the latest one. So in order to get behind the developers, what are some of those award-winning developers that you've seen that sort of seem to be ahead of the crowd in terms of their marketing efforts?
Sorry, Ozzy, in what way were you saying?
Well, just you say award-winning developers, right? Yeah. Like we know, of course, Mr. Gillespie and some of the... I mean, to me, there's genius there. These people, it's not just an average kind of a building. I mean, you look at some like Vancouver House, and every time you go over the bridge, wow, you know, how does it stand up, you know?
And these buildings are iconic, as you say, Ozzy, and they've changed the skyline of Vancouver and North America. Vancouver is actually one of the leading places for iconic buildings. And
really?
Yeah. West Bank is one of the, you know, at the forefront of that with Vancouver House, as you said, Butterfly. We've had other people come into the marketplace like Boza Developments with 1515, which is also architecturally stunning.
And that's the key is that, you know, I mean, if I'm going to be spending $2-3 million or more on a condominium, I do want to have a different kind of a rounding and lifestyle. It's interesting what you say about stories. I believe that a company is the stories that people tell about them. Individuals are the stories that people tell about them. And I know in particularly, whenever I went, I believe it was the Butterfly, and there was a big sign that said, you know, in defense of beauty. And I thought, what the heck is in defense of beauty? So I went in, I'm looking for prices and condos, but no, then The owner comes up and he tells this story about dresses. There's these very fancy dresses that he has, and they're beautiful, and the huge $1 million piano was, and it's a story, right? And I still don't know what the price is. I don't know when it's finished. Then he has created a book all about it. And the whole idea, I thought to myself, why is he talking about the piano? Well, when I left for him, I went around and told everybody that story. I still didn't know the prices. The story was important. And or when I hear nobody uses a balcony, that's a fact, you know. So I'm going to create a sanctuary on it. And so you create an environment where you say, huh, I'm interested in something different.
Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned we're selling luxury. We're actually selling lifestyle, Aussie. And people really need to be told how this is going to change their life and how they're going to benefit from living in this building.
Sure.
It's only a long-term good investment because it's an iconic building and it's architecturally significant, but it's also something that they're going to enjoy as well.
Right.
This is their home. This is where they come and rest at night and feel happy in their environment. So without that lifestyle, that creativity of what is it going to feel like? And for example, say in our Monogram development, we've created kind of a urban resort feeling to it. And I think that will resonate with the new buyers that are coming to the market, particularly in the tech industry, because it's, you know, it's got the sustainability, it's got the technology. And
well, we got to stop you there because they have a machine there in that you will have. That machine opens your doors. It shows you the person that is ringing your doorbell. I mean, it just has dozens and dozens of features I've never even heard before.
It's a real step forward, Aussie, and it's exciting to see this because we're really changing the way people will live in the near future in Vancouver. And we're at the forefront in Vancouver. We're lucky that we have brave developers that want to evolve. It's an evolution of the way we live downtown Vancouver.
Well, you got to be, like I say, you got to be a bit of a genius. You got to, and certainly when I look at these buildings, they're stunning. And they have to, you know, some of these buildings take 5, 6, 7 years to finish, right? So the planning that has to go in, the marketing, all that has to be a concerted effort. And that's why somebody that's needed with your kind of an experience that understands that highfalutin traveler, right? That, you know, and it's not wrong with them. In fact, they have the wherewithal and the ideas of where they want to live. I know that the Monogram, the top floor is all like sort of like a garden kind of an environment where everybody can go up there.
That's right. Yeah, it is. You know, it's we didn't just want to make it exclusive. We wanted to make it inclusive, and that's why the top floor is reserved for everybody in the building to share. It's a nice big space. We've got over 20,000 square foot of amenity in that building. It's going to be a real pleasure to see people enjoying those spaces. And they're very mixed from the swimming pool to the hot tub to the sauna to the gym to the Pilates area, screening room, flex working spaces as well, and gourmet kitchen and entertainment lounge. A little playground if you have children that's separate so it doesn't bother the adults. It's really well thought of. It's really a well-rounded building. And I think probably one of the first we've seen in Canada that's so well-rounded.
Yeah, and the key word is amenities. I think all of us, we're buying a lifestyle, as you point out. Even in the smaller buildings, they have to have an amenity oriented. You can't put a building in the middle of nowhere and saying, here, this is where you live. No, I live in all of the different things. Now, with Birking in Seattle and London and Beijing and Dubai, do we have buyers from these areas actually coming to Vancouver?
You know, COVID has been a little bit of a deterrent, obviously, because, you know, people from Asia, particularly China, we've seen they had a longer lockup period than we did. It's, you know, on and off for 2.5 years, really. Even last year, up till near Christmas, there was a lockdown in Shanghai.
Yeah.
But China's not the only country. You know, there are other countries like Europe, which had longer periods for COVID. And also we've had seen a recession during this period of time after COVID. We're starting to see more immigrants come in. And if you look at the count of immigrants that are coming into Canada, over 500,000 consistently, We've hit 40 million already. We're going to see more people coming in from America as well, tech type people, film industry people. So it's not just one source that we have, Aussie, now. We have a lot of people coming from a lot of places, even as far as India as well. We have a lot of young people coming into the country now. And I know that changes. And a lot of people, like I say, in the tech industry, it's going to be growing because Canada, when you look at it, we look at Vancouver, which is closest to Seattle, which is, the tech hub of America. We're a sister city to that and very close to there. So, we by orientation of where we are, Vancouver is going to become the tech hub for Canada. And I think that you're going to see more and more of those type of people. Of course, we have the foreign buyer ban till 2027, which obviously could be repealed, but for all intents and purposes, our localized market is very strong right now, and the people coming into the country is, a high number as far as
Yeah.
percentage of
Well, of course, our government now came in and said that, well, we're going to change the goals that we had, particularly on the student visas and so on. And so now they dropped their target rates. But the point is, we are a very desirable place, And I made a speech this week, and we're talking about, we are in Vancouver, and we're bemoaning, we're crying about the rain or the weather. And what we should do is we should realize that around the world, our immigration offices are full of people that want to apply to live here, and we're already here, so might as well enjoy it. But it is the market has been sort of has been particularly on the pre-sale market. I think what some people don't realize is that many developers literally need to sell 60% of their building on a pre-sale basis in order to get the financing. And so sometimes, and this has been working very well in the last 8 or 9 years, these were always very, very quickly achieved. How is the market currently on the pre-sale area?
There's a pent-up demand now, Aussie, because we've had a slower period for 2.5 years, and perhaps we've not had new product that is appealing to the marketplace. So, it's very important that we have, a product that attracts buyers and shows them that there's a difference in moving to this new building or this new development. So you're starting to see, like I say, more lifestyle-centric type of developments, and Monogram being one of them. We've seen that just in the last 3, 4 months, since interest rates are going down, we have a lot more people asking about new product coming onto the market and what is it and what's the differentiating factor. So we're starting to see not only curiosity, but people that are saying, hey, I'll put my hand up. I want to see the new development, and I may want to come and live there,
Yeah, that makes sense. The other thing is too that you take a big high rise, like a 49-story high rise, right on Burrard downtown. I mean, we're talking what, 8, 9 years for it to be finished, right?
From concept to finish, yes, Aussie. From the development side, we're hoping that it's finished by 2029. So, that it seems way out there. But remember, we're turning into 25. That's only about 4.5 years away, right? So,
But I
yeah.
mean, the market will be different, right? And if I have always maintained that we live in the world's most unreported inflation of all time, and countless speeches in every one of my books, I quote Milton Friedman, who said that inflation is primarily a monetary phenomena. And boy, do we ever have a monetary phenomena worldwide. We have been printing money like crazy. So when people are looking at inflation, I have looked at it from an asset inflation. And hard asset inflation will always and continue to inflate, which includes real estate and gold and some of the other hard assets. But we also have an inflation in commodities. So I keep getting letters, well, copper is going down and all this comes on. Yes, and commodities are driven by what other nations buy from us. China doesn't buy any copper and so on. We could actually have a deflation in that area. So there's two kinds of inflation. As far as I'm concerned, the business that I'm in is real estate, which is a hard asset inflation. And the mind-boggling thing, it has been going up through every major crisis, whether it was a 13.5% mortgage rate in the 90s, right, or the 2007. And every time we had a contraction, it's over, the whole world is going to change, and then we go up another step. And I think a buyer today that can wait 5 years for an outcome is very likely. We may go through a slower period of time, but with falling interest rates, it's maybe a great time to be looking.
I totally agree with you, Ozzy. We've got to realize that as Canadians, sometimes we don't value where we're living. We have fresh air, fresh water, water for, that we can drink out of the tap. We've got fertile soil. We have wheat. We have gold. We have diamonds. We have hydrogen. We have wheat. We have a supply of almost everything petroleum. We have third largest oil reserves in the world. This is a very mineral and naturally wealthy country. Some may say maybe a little bit mismanaged at this moment, but I will say that with COVID has been a tough time to steer through for every country, and I see bright future. And if you look at internationally, let's take away just from looking at Vancouver on its own. Internationally, we're still, very well priced against cities like London, New York, Tokyo, Bombay, Dubai,
Singapore.
Singapore. Thank you very much. And these are budding nations that real estate's very expensive. We're still a fraction of their price, and we're still the most, I think, desirable lifestyle-wise place to live. So we have to get a little bit away from being so tribal and localized and look at it from a macro perspective,
Well, I agree. It's but I mean that's what we like to do. We like to complain, but really it's true. It is, first of all, you talked on the immigration side and we have a buyer's ban, but I have a lot of clients that buy commercial real estate. And as a foreigner, you can buy commercial real estate. And we've been recommending to buy that mini warehouse or the strata warehouses or all sorts of different things are possible and you don't actually have to have that residential yet. By the way, the statistics do not agree with the government that the foreign buyer makes some big impact on prices. It is maybe lack of product is more important. But I mean, you just came back from London, and so you're very well versed to talk about the fact that in London it is more expensive than it is here.
Absolutely, and not the only place. As I say, many places in Paris, another one. And people will say, "Oh, well, those are major cities." But we were just recently in Spain for Elisa's wedding, and I'll say that when we were asked around the table, "Where would you like to live?" A lot of people started to realize how lucky they were to actually live in Vancouver when you go get outside of there. So sometimes until we get out, we don't start to appreciate what we have, so.
And at the point you're making, it's funny we have now with an election in the state and no politics, but the thing is people are worried about tariffs. Well, I think you pointed out that we're producing oil. We are actually producing 65% of American oil, and 97% of our total production goes to the United States. 80% of our exports are with the United States. So whatever tariffs are going to be discussed, they're going to be discussed and it won't be a big deal because what about autos, for instance, production of autos is interborder. And so I think Mr. Trump or that new government will look at that. And there's a difference between talking tariffs with China or tariffs with Canada. Maybe it's so interrelated. And so, you can live in Canada and you have access to the whole United States market as well, which is like our major trading partner. So we are well positioned. The other thing is, as you know, as an international traveler, you can actually in the morning talk to one part of the world, in the evening talk to the opposite part of the world. We're uniquely positioned, to work for the international buyer. Now, looking at Vancouver, what are some of the emerging neighborhoods that you see?
Yes, there are many neighborhoods that are budding and in metamorphosis, as I say. East Vancouver being one of the most, I think, significant areas. We're going to start to see new developments and new communities grow because it's largely undeveloped for multi-family use. But you're also seeing outskirts like Surrey, Brentwood, Metrotown, the Tri-Cities area, and you're seeing, more multifamily usage there. And, those areas are particularly good for young families because they're a little bit more affordable And the resources are good there. We've got good malls, we've got good education, we've got good extracurricular activities for young families. So, there's some real big options. I think the pain right now is that our transportation system is not so good and our bridges are not so good. So these are some things we're going to have to look at in the near future as we get growing population in our territory here.
Yeah, that's why, like, I have a small real estate company, and all we do is sell TODs, transit-oriented developments, right? So if we invest in Surrey, well, then I want to be, the building has to be close to the SkyTrain or some of those. And we do, I agree with you, it's difficult. Although when you consider, the places you go to and you talk traffic, we have no traffic. I mean, I used to work in Taiwan. That's traffic, it's, so we are still a ways to go in terms of,
I agree
big,
with
big traffic.
you. I agree, but you see countries like China and India, and you see the infrastructure they're building, and looking at how do we make it more efficient? I think we need to wake up a little bit and be a little more proactive on that side. And there's no fault to be blamed for any government or anything like that. It's just something that is should be on the agenda pretty quick as our population
Yeah,
grows.
and it's growing, right? We're growing, and we are. It's a very desirable place, I mean, I took some of my Chinese buyers. I once rented in the summer, rented a helicopter, and flew them to Whistler, and we were able to ski on at a mountain in the middle of the summer, and then we flew back in the afternoon. I took them out on my boat, and we went fishing. Where can you do that in the world? I mean, it is really like paradise in terms of lifestyle. Okay, so your first time home buyer, what do you do right now? What do you recommend to the first timer?
Well, it's curious you asked me that question because it was on the way here. I was with an Uber driver, a young fellow, and he was asking me the same question.
Yeah.
I said, right now, most people think we're kind of bottomed out at this cycle of the market. So it's a nice time to enter when interest rates are lower and affordability is a little bit better. I think that first-time buyers have to plunge in the market at some point, and this seems to be a good point right now with excuse me, with lower interest rates and lower prices. So I think there's that opportunity right now for first-time buyers. And there's certainly a pent-up demand because they've not been so active in the last 3, 4 years, COVID, and then after that, higher interest rates. But also, there hasn't been significant amount of new product coming on the market within that period of time as well.
Well, the other thing is it's a point that I do the Michael Campbell show on Saturdays, and that's my point, is that for some reason, as a people, we think a good market is if five buyers wrestle each other to the ground in the living room of the seller, and one emerges victoriously, having paid 100,000 more than the guy is asking. That's a good market. But now, when realtors have time, mortgage brokers have time, to get you the best mortgage, because hey, you can still get a 4.1% 5-year fixed rate. Everybody is talking it's so bad. Hey, traditionally or historically, that's a great rate. It's not, let's not go carried away. But the thing is, yes, because of lower sales, we also have opportunities. And the buyer, I'm not saying he should run out and buy everything, but carefully evaluate, look at the new developments, and in some of those places that you mentioned, they are there. There's competition, and some of the developers are also very incentivizing the buyer. In some cases, they're actually buying your property taxes for 2 years, or the strata fees, or and you can negotiate. I even suggested to some, make a stink bid. I think a developer would rather see a stink bid than no bid. And so at this is the time, if you believe like I do that we are in this inflationary world where we owe $330 trillion to the world. We're never going to pay it back. It's going to be paid back with a diminished currency, and the values of everything is going to go higher. I mean, let's face it. And 50 years ago, average house price was $20,000, and we thought that was expensive. And since then, we have seen this massive increase, and I think to some extent it will continue. Okay, so the first-time buyer, what about the challenges for the developers?
Well, right now we've got challenges, meaning Higher CACs is definitely one, and the cost of building has gone up as well, Ozzy. I mean, labor has gone up. Building costs have gone up tremendously. I think almost 20, 25%. Raw materials like wood and steel have gone up as well. So it's a challenging market because we have land prices that have come down, but building costs that have gone up, CACs have gone up. And then the expectation of the market is to have something affordable. So that makes it very hard for developers to be able to juggle right now. And certainly, I think there needs to be, and I think coming forward, you're starting to see conservative government coming up with, under $1 million that GST is forgiven. Those type of plans to incentivize people, especially first-time buyers, to come to the market. And it may not be in the downtown area, but it will help people generally through our marketplace. And that works its way up in the marketplace as well. And we do need to give it a little kickstart right now, especially with the first-time buyers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The thing is that we have government incentives, or government telling developers they're to blame, or realtors are to blame, the investors are to be all to blame. But listen, if I wanted to invest in something, I'm looking for even a small return of some sort. Well, we have a federal speculation tax, we have a local speculation tax in BC that's coming due. We have taxes you haven't even heard of. There is this mystical UST and the GST and the transfer taxes and speculation and so on and so on. And people saying, you know what? I really don't understand this. And your point now, at least they're taking away the GST on a rental purpose built. But I said to some of my friends at the university who are leaning very, very much left of center, and I'm right of center, both are not extreme. But I said, if I was you, I would get a lower taxes, just like you said. Because right now, you're not getting your taxes, and you're getting the building not built. But maybe if you have lower taxes or no taxes, think about that concept, and you build a lot and then tax the heck out of it. That would make a lot more sense to me. I'm not saying that's what you should do, but at least it would get the thing built, you know. We had programs in the past, the famous MERP program, which was very much, in trouble, but it builds thousands of units. And that's what everybody says. We need to have more units. We have more affordability. Well, one of the things to make it affordable, get rid of the GST, and we are adding things to it.
I agree with you, Ozzy, and we have to look at new ways of getting affordable housing to people and incentivizing, as I say, for example's sake, new technologies need incentives. Like, for example, say the electric car has been incentivized in America
Yeah.
and heavily subsidized in China, and it's helped grow that infrastructure. Right now, we're building, basically the way we did, 1,000 years ago, when we have the technology to build, more machine-made type environment with 3D printing and with prefab. There's so many technologies that we can use if we have affordable land that we can use, so that we do have affordable housing for people, for the young people and young families that need it. But we need to be a little bit more creative in the way that we approach this, not just to say blame it on the developers. Because when you've taxed the developer in every which way, and then you're asking them to produce affordable product, it seems to be pointless and frankly
Well,
silly. We need to have more of a better idea of how we're going to create these solutions. And there are ways of doing it. We just need to be a little bit more creative.
it's true. I mean, one of our leading architect firms came out, I think, a year ago and said that the average cost of a condo is 30% government fees and taxes, you know. So think about that. So that $1 million condo really should be 700,000, you know. So. But I mean, okay, so maybe I blame the government blames us. But what you're pointing out very eloquently, we need to do something, and we need the housing, and people need housing. And yes, everybody likes the word affordable, but then let's think together on how we can actually create that.
Agreed, agreed.
Well, look, it's been really a thrill to have you here. I mean, somebody that has a true international flavor. and understands how people worldwide think, and then has chosen to immigrate to Canada, just like me, because we like the place, we like to be here. It's really a great place to be. So, do you want any final words to our audience?
Well, I just wanted to say I didn't choose to come here. My father chose to come here, but he made the right choice. Always a pleasure to see you, Ozzy. You're a true gentleman and always very professional.
Well, thank you so much. You're very kind. And we have an outline on Karim's biography and history, but also more important, the contact information is just below the description, below the video. And those of us that listen to us on podcast, just go to ozbuzz.ca, ozbuzz.ca, and there we also have his contact information available. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Ozzy.